December 20, 2018, it's the Wat from Pedro Show.
I'll go up a little, let's see.
Well,
I be blowing, man. I be blowing when I go into the melody.
This is insert one.
Watt for Pedro Show. Hey, Brother Matt.
Hey, how's it going? Happy birthday.
Glad to be here. Yeah, on a Thursday.
Yeah.
Right? And you had Burrito Day yesterday.
Yeah, coming off of Burrito Day.
Yeah, was it a good one?
Yeah, 35th annual.
Have you ever called them dung bags?
No.
Okay, I think those are the microwave ones.
They used to call them bean rolls. The little ones, like a Taco Bell, would be bean rolls.
They used to be a burrito chef.
Cool. There's our guest, Brother Matt, all the way from
Welcome.
New York City.
Welcome.
In Brooklyn, right? It's Mr. Mark Rebo.
Brooklyn Welcome Burritos. Aboard.
Yeah, I was just, Nels Klein Thank just you. Wrote me. He said he recorded with you last week.
That's right, we did. Chris Davis's record. It's going to be a great record, too.
Oh, bitchin'. Well, we started the show off with Sonship, John Coltrane. Rudy Von Gelder says, take three, insert one. So I think this was either a fix for a clam or a clam itself. But it's a documented thing, and I picked it because Mark Rebo Trio after that with live version of Sonship. Nels did a whole with Greg Bendy and like all of interstellar space.
Right, right.
And I was at one of those.
An admirable undertaking.
Yeah, balls out. I mean, I saw one of the things. They did put a couple live tunes, and one of them was from a Shittin' Factory show I saw sitting there with Lee Rinaldo. Yeah, pretty balls out. Henry Kaiser asked me to do something in February, and I told him I was scared shit. He says he's got buddies. In fact, the buddies of Nels, Wayne Pete on the organ, Vinny Golia on the soprano, sax, and oh, they're going to do the heavy lifting, Watt, but come on. Jesus Christ. Training wheel for the 61-year-old D-boy. Birthday boy. Yeah.
Right,
Mark,
right.
Tell me your earliest music memory.
I'm hearing some breaking. You're breaking up there.
I'm sorry. Tell me your earliest musical memory.
My earliest musical memory, probably my earliest sound memory. I can't distinguish them. My earliest sonic memory was when there must have been washed in some sink, and I remember hearing this amazing. The first sound I was aware of was this horrible sucking noise as the water ran out the drain, and I remember. Thinking I was going to go down the drain, and in a sense I did. But the first music experience I remember was, like, my mom took me to the supermarket, and she must have left me in the front seat of the car or something, while she went into the supermarket, at the Safeways or whatever it was in Orange, New Jersey. And this song by Harry Belafonte came on that had the lyric, "My heart is down, my head is spinning around." Oh, it was at the Kingsway supermarket or something like that, or Kingston, whatever it was. Because I had and Harry Belafonte was singing, "I had to leave a little girl in Kingston Town," and I heard the lyrics and I became terrified. I thought, I always suspected that. They just do that. They leave little kids in the supermarket, and they never come back. And, like, then she wasn't there, and I was freaking out. So I remember that was my first music I remember.
Now,
it was traumatic.
At the pad, were your parents listeners or players?
No, not at all. Like, my mom had been like a Bobby Sox, which I guess meant she would wear white Bobby socks and listen to white big band people like Glenn Miller, so she was way into that. But do like probably black dancing styles like jitterbugging,
Okay.
But no, they didn't play music around the house. My father played harmonica.
Okay.
And, may he rest in peace. He was a very passionate harmonica player, chromatic even.
Whoa.
I inherited his chromatica, but he had a terrible sense of time. I probably inherited that too.
But he probably didn't play in ensembles. He probably did solo So it didn't matter, like the Bob Dylan thing. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, can you remember the first record you bought for yourself?
Yeah, I did. I think I bought two. I bought two records. I can't remember which I bought first. Okay, but I don't know what's happened to me since, but I started out with really good taste. I bought the first ones were the Beatles record Rubber Soul, and I think another side of Bob Dylan record, whichever one had Masters of War on it. Anyways, and then also
I think that's Freewheeling.
Maybe it might be
Freewheeling or Hard Rain.
That sounds right.
Yeah,
one of those, and maybe soon after, or maybe it was one of the first two, I got Miles Davis live at the Antibes Jazz Festival.
Oh, yeah. What about at school? Did you get involved with, like, choir or the jazz band or the marching band or shit like that?
I was in, like, orchestra or something playing trumpet. I wasn't very imaginative. Like, you know, they said, you know, what instrument do you want to play? And all the boys said trumpet, and all the girls said violin, except for this one guy, Michael, who said violin. You know, he was smart. and trumpet left, you know. I was actually really good on trumpet.
Well, maybe that's, why, that's why you got the Miles record.
Yeah, that was, well, actually, the Miles record, that was the reason. But also, yeah, it was also because my friend's old, you know, I'm an oldest brother, so I didn't, you know, so for hipness, I looked at my friend had an older brother, and we used to see what he was checking out, and he had a Miles Davis record, and we thought that was so cool. So that's why I got that, because I played trumpet. But you know, right away I heard the Miles Davis record, and it kind of like ruined me because I went in I was really good, but my teacher was this guy Salvatore Grimaldi, like classical European classical musician type trumpet player, and like so. After I got the Miles record, I put it on. I said, "Mr. Grimaldi, I want you to teach me to play like that." And I said, let me see now." And so then, he said he put on the chart. I remember the chart he put in front of me was "I've Got a Lovely Bunch of Coconuts," and he just says, "You know, well, you play the notes, and then when you get on one note, you do a embellishment like." You know, like to do a trill or something, like or whatever those things are called, those little embellishments. And somehow, you know, I did what he said, but I knew right away that I was never going to get to playing Miles Davis like that.
Okay.
Anyways, then in a few years, I got braced. That was all over.
Did you do any of the marching band, like at the football game shit?
I didn't do that. Although,
because I know they carry trumpets,
you know, many. Right. But decades later, when I told the story about how I used to play trumpet when I was in Tom Waits' band, that was a big mistake because he right away made me get a trumpet and play it. So at that point, I hadn't played in like 20 years, you know, and then there I was playing lines in front of thousands of people. It was really crazy.
I
have an E-flat Bombardino, which I bring on demonstrations, you know, or whenever I'm bored, it's portable.
Whoa. That's bitching.
So,
I want to play something here. Combite. Did I pronounce that right?
Kumbit. Yes, Kumbit by Franz Caseus.
Kumbit. Okay, here we go. I knew I would fuck that up.
Yeah. Well,
and this is one of your earlier ones that Mary Ho flowed me. De Boone learned from a guy who taught him flamenco. I like acoustic.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's how I Franz was my teacher. When I just learned guitar, you know.
We're going to get to the guitar right after I put the music on you.
Thank you. I'm going. Oh, children are insane. First they drove me from the schoolyard, then they beat me around the brain.
Pivo show. Kumbi, Mark Ribot. What were you saying about that? We'll get to it. Next, we had the Father Figures. I'm going to play with them tonight because celebrating my
Age with
Brother Matt in Strong Beach. Hotel San Pedro. They wrote a tune about being in our town.
Cool.
I think playing at Harold's place. So. His Biker's Bar. I can't believe that does gigs now, but they do. Then we had Mood Indigo, Mark Ribot, Rootless Cosmopolitans. Still Houseplants out of Glasgow with Punchbag. And finally, Mark Rebo's Ceramic Dog with Pennsylvania 66666. So that must be a tribute to your mother's swing band thing.
Yeah.
Remember, like, the band would stop, all the horn section and shit would stop, and they'd yell out some kind of phone number. Go ahead.
Right, it's kind of a cross. It's a cross between that... that big band tune, and the actual inspiration was Shahzad Ismaili, who plays bass.
Oh, I know Shahzad. Here, let me tell you about Shahzad. He wants to transcribe my bass solos. Guy's beautiful man.
Yeah.
He really is. He's a wonderful cat. Okay, so it was his idea. That's right. He's the bass man at Ceramic Dog and Chess Smith on the drums.
Well, the lyrics from that tune, Shahzad came up with a bass line, and then we were playing the bass line, and he was talking about, somehow we were talking about his growing up, you know, his parents were from Pakistan.
Right.
And, but he grew up in Danville, Pennsylvania.
Right.
I guess there wasn't, and Shahzad's kind of an unusual, human being anyway. And he had a kind of a rough time growing up because he wasn't like the other kids. So that was the inspiration. In other words, they beat the shit out of him on a regular basis. So that was the inspiration for that song.
What am I thinking of? William Golden, Lord of the Flies. Kids are just wonderful. You know what's so funny?
Yeah, well, there's
a movie made with amateur children actors, right? And when they get rescued, they go right back to the little kid shit. But when the adults are gone, you know, Ralph, Piggy, all that fucking shit. Little kids.
Yeah, yeah.
You gotta watch it. So I'm glad you wrote a song like that. Mark, tell us about how you got on guitar from trumpet.
Well, it had a lot to do with, two things. Keith Richards and braces.
Whoa. Oh yeah, braces. You know, ambusher, yeah.
Well, that's, Keith Richards, you know, like, and the Rolling Stones, that was like one of my inspirations for wanting to play guitar. But, you know, braces hastened the transition because, like, it hurts to play trumpet when you have braces. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I kind of stopped practicing trumpet and put my efforts towards guitar.
Well, how'd you get your first guitar?
Well, you know, like Franz Casais, it's kind of a weird story, but he was a friend of my family. Like, he lived on the same block. My aunt was a songwriter in New York. I mean, she wrote songs under the name of Rhoda Roberts, but her real name was Rhoda Unger. And Franz lived on her block, and they were friends, and they shared a car, and like, you know, and we had holidays with them, you know, Thanksgiving, Passover, whatever. And so when I said, I was listening to stuff on the radio, I said, I want to play guitar, you know. I don't hear trumpet heroes on, well, at least on the, you know, on the pop radio I was listening to.
Except, you know, Sly Stone. Play. You should have been listening to Sly Stone. Yeah, I think they had a lady on trumpet.
So, yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true. I was listening to the wrong stuff, clearly. But but the way it worked is, like, you know, they said, well, Franz plays guitar. It didn't matter that he was, like, a classical. And, you know, I was, like, I don't know, I was 10 years old. What did I know? So because he was a friend of the family and I guess needed a gig, you know, he was looking for students, it was decided that I would go into New York every week and study with him. And that's what I did.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, that's how I learned.
So your first guitar is acoustic guitar then?
Yeah, but I mean, I immediately wanted to, that's not why I wanted to play guitar. I didn't think I want to play classical guitar.
No, you want to be Keith Richards on electric guitar. Unless you're doing Wild Horses. You can play acoustic for Wild Horses.
Right, but I wasn't thinking about that. I wanted to play electric guitar.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly, I acquired some cheap guitar, and soon I had a garage band in a real garage. That was the beauty of New Jersey.
Yeah.
Is if you wanted to have a garage, there was tons of garages.
So after school, some buddies. Did this first band have a name?
Well, okay. You know, yes, it did. We were called Love Gun.
There's a Kiss song called that.
Well, there's a Zeppelin tune, but I didn't, and I that the original lyric didn't come from, like so many things that we think are from 60s rock groups. I'm going to go, will it knock me off the air if I go online? Because that lyric actually came from, how can I say this politely, did not originate with Led Zeppelin.
Remember it from Kiss. I think there's a Kiss album called Love Gun.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that album, Kiss was...
This is like late 70s. I think it's the one...
Yeah, I'm talking like...
77, I think that one.
Yeah. I'm talking late 60s.
Yeah. So maybe it was Kiss that stole the name Love Gun from Led Zeppelin and not you.
Right. Yeah, Kiss did it. It's all Kiss's fault.
That's right.
But I'm wondering who wrote that lyric.
Okay.
I've got you sights of my love gun. Let's see. Thanks. The internet really is a good thing.
There's some parts. Some parts.
It says Albert King here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brother Matt. Brother Matt had a blues shows for many years.
I had dinner with Albert King once.
Yeah, Brother Matt had dinner with Albert King. I think he played a guitar upside down without changing the strings.
The big flying V.
Yep.
Whoa.
Yeah, it wasn't like Jimmy where he switched the strings. He played the motherfucker upside down.
Right. Well, I'm actually left-handed, and I play right-handed.
That's what Kay did, because she thought the strong finger was supposed to be the fingering one, not the plucking one.
Yeah, well, luckily for both of us, we play with both hands, really. or we try to, anyways.
Did Love Gun do any gigs?
Yeah, we would play like at other kids' parties, like and the occasional bar mitzvah. We actually made some money, like they would actually pay us money to do that thing. And we played at our school talent show in junior high, and the gym teacher pulled the plug on it with us. It was very humiliating for all of us. I remember one gig that we were playing at some bar mitzvah. I almost died because the toilet overflowed and my amp started sounding funny. And I think we were in the middle of the Wilson Pickett song, Midnight Hour.
Yeah, I know.
And I was really enjoying playing that guitar part. It was one of the few that I could play. And I reached back to the amp and the toilets had overflowed and like there was like a whole river of crappy water enveloping the amp. I almost got fried sewage on my
I'm glad you didn't get electrocuted.
I'm surprised too. I nearly did.
I think that's what happened to Gary Thayne and Uriah Heep. The bass man got electrocuted on stage.
Man,
really? Yeah. No,
the crowd thinks it's special effects.
Yeah, they think it's a part of the act. Right. How long did Love Gun last?
Love Gun went on for a few years, I think, that was like encompassed late junior high. And by early high school, by mid high school, I was had refounded a different band with, it was based on, I don't know if I want to say this on the radio, but it was like, it was people who would, we were taking similar drugs, and we decided, and that band's name, the new band's name was Smegma.
Oh.
There
was a Smegma on the West Coast. In fact, I think they're still around.
Really?
The LA Free Music Society in the 70s, and they moved up to Oregon. Richard Meltzer was part of it for a little while. Yeah, their albums their albums sound like... You turn on all your TVs and radios in your room and you record the whole fucking thing. And incidental noises are really trippy. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, December 20, 2018. Special B-Day for what? Special guest Mark Rabeau, Brother Matt. Hold tight for hour two.
Yeah.
December 20, 2018. It's the second hour of the Watt Pedro Show.
electricity. That's all I've got. Not even one caress. Thank you.
teddy bear. I saw a little girl crying. She said she lost a teddy bear. Oh, then I can get you another one. No, no, no. It was my teddy bear. As we were talking, a cloud passed and cast a pool of light around her. I saw that she was not a little girl. Ooh. You are a woman. No, no, no. But you are. I felt like I was in the middle of an ocean, unable to touch the horizon. All my life, I was floating on my emotion. Not knowing life had its own motion. Teddy bear, I saw a little girl crying.
This song is a right to petition. Look like a Shreve. dig this big crux. That's way too big. A peek at the wholeness that's way too big.
He gave the rich kingdom of 2,200 square feet, with nearly 3 feet between houses, two new cars, two new leases, a pile of bills, and a smell of debt in the air. His parents raised him right to get the new, newer, newest of the bigger, better, best. More you can ever hope to repay.
We'll be right back.
Wafra Pedro Show. Start off the second hour with Los Cubanos Positos. Positizos. It's a prosthetic. Cubano prosthetics. Yeah. And yeah. Omi Yoris Mas. And then something from Turkey, Signet Sepeci with Entrasi Dim Dim Yar. Yoko Ono, she's still making records at 85 with Teddy Bear. Sun Watchers and Eugene Chadbourne, Dr. Huge, doing one of my songs I wrote for Minuteman called, well, he just calls it a political song, but I call it a political song for Mike Jackson is to sing. And I sent it to his management. I thought, if Mike Jackson sang this song, Minuteman would never have to explain themselves ever again. And his people never wrote this song.
Never wrote this. Have you had to explain? Have you had to explain yourself before?
Billy Boy from Bullets or Balloons? They're from Spokanistan, or as like the people up there like to call it, little town of Methlehem. And then Bernays Propaganda out of Skopje, Macedonia. We're going to talk with them next month, Brother Matt. Kerkana Glado, Brother Vasco. And finally, Songs of Resistance, The Big Fool. Tell us something about... no, look, we're going to pick up from high school. You're doing a review of oldies mixed with MC5.
Right. The Milburn Grease Band, like I say, pre-Shanana, retro band. So, you know, we would, I don't know, do weird things, throw hamburgers at the audience, play doo-wop tunes, and then mix them up with some MC5 tunes about fighting the police or something.
But you know what? I remember back in the USA, I think they covered Tutti Frutti.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, John Landau production. Really terrible. It's like very much gelded. Very much gelded. Let's put that one. So,
right.
Yeah, but you gotta, no studies. So what happened after high? I love MC5 too. I think Rob Tyner was actually a great singer. I mean, he's a trippy looking dude, but so am I. So Steve Boone. Hey, what happened after high school with you and guitar?
They convinced me to go to college, and that lasted about a year and a half. It didn't end well in Boston, and you know, so I was like trying to write tunes and, you know, play. I kept playing guitar. I wound up in Maine. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't really want to be a musician because, you know, I've seen a little bit of my aunt's world, you know, like songwriters and professional musicians. And I thought, okay, I mean, I love my aunt and all, but she was like really cool. But that whole world was off of showbiz. It was kind of off-putting for me. But then, so I just, you know, I went to Maine and I figured, okay, I'll do whatever I can. My big ambition was to learn arc welding so I could get a job in the Bath shipyards or something like that. And then, I don't know.
That's real good for the eyesight. D. Boone's half-brother did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, puts big little permanent blue things in the back of your eyeballs for
Well, I got those anyways, but yeah. But then I quickly realized, you know, like I was trying to get work up there, and I quickly realized like the only thing I knew how to do was to play guitar. So I started getting gigs in with local bands and playing in local bars and played in bands up there, and none of them were particularly any good. We did drive around and play four sets a night, and like I kind of learned to play from doing that, four or five sets a night. You know, it was, I mean, we didn't play, it wasn't top 40, it wasn't original bands. We would do cover tunes, but I mean, basically it would have been a top 40 if we'd been smart enough to know what the top 40 was. You know, but we played bad, you know, we played crappy bars and Holiday Inns and whatever we could get at, and you know, when people would start to fight, you'd have to play a C&W tune. So I was doing that. I took about 10 lessons on how. I went briefly to a crummy. I went briefly to a music school up there. It was University of Maine at Augusta, popular music program. I dropped out of that too. I took about 10 lessons with a really good bebop guitarist, which consists of my entire jazz education. And
what's his name?
Pardon?
His name.
Oh, Tony Baffa. Yes, okay, that's right.
Give him some credit.
As far as I know, still up there. Yeah, that, no,
that
I
is
should,
the
I
whole.
Should.
That is the whole of your jazz education. We got to give the man a name.
No, he was great. He kind of gave me the entire Berklee School of Music 4-year education in 10 lessons.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
That's Icano.
He was a great guitarist himself. So what else? Oh yeah, so and it's to plow through all this, you know, bullshit part. I didn't really care. You know, all I wanted to do was play guitar. I didn't really care what or how.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I decided to move down to New York. My relationship was crashing or whatever. I decided to move down to New York. My aunt said, oh, everybody's playing lots of gigs down here. I said, great, I'll come down. I guess I thought, well, maybe I'll be like a studio musician or something. And it wasn't until after, you know, in Maine, I was playing rock music, but I decided I wanted to be a jazz musician also, which was, like in Maine, it looked like jazz was the music of freedom.
Okay.
But when I arrived in New York, what I quickly found out was that, you know, there was a lot, I didn't really walk right into the loft scene where people were experimenting a lot. Like, I kind of tried to do the regular jazzing, and I was really bad at it. I got a gig with Brother Jack McDuff, you know, that lasted about months, you know. But I was always like, I mean, may he rest in peace, but he was always like glowering at me and yelling at me and giving me the death. And he was right, you know, kind of right. You know, like one day he got really mad at me and he said, you're not a jazz player. I mean, I would have given my left foot to be, I mean, he would drive down the road and have his headphones on. We'd be driving to Chicago or something. And he'd drive for half an hour, and then he'd take his headphones off and say, you know, George Benson learned all those tunes in after one day. And you in 3 weeks, and you're still reading the charts. Then he'd put his headphones on for another 50 miles, and he'd take them off, and he'd say, you know, George Benson, when he played that, you know, like, I was like grumbling, yeah, why don't you, George Benson, see what he says, you know. But like, I mean, ultimately, Brother Jack was right. You know, what he said finally when he got really mad, he says, you know, you're not a jazz player. You're not even an R&B player. You're a rock player. And it took me a couple of, to realize, A, he's right, you know, and B, realize that's all right.
It is
you know,
all right.
It's not, you know, I mean, I have a lasting, in spite of the fact that Brother Jack was a hard teacher, I have a lasting affection for his music, you know, sure. And for a lot of, you know, there's certain forms of jazz that I just love, you know, including those, that organ quartet stuff, you know, everybody, that whole scene, you know, Groove Holmes, you know, Sonny Stitt, people like that, you know, it's all, Jimmy McGriff, Charles Erlin,
sure.
That, I love that stuff. And I, you know, from there, it kind of skips from there. And I love Django Reinhardt, but it kind of skips right from there to Sonship, you know, like I kind of missed a lot of the, yeah. I mean, to John Coltrane's Sonship.
No. There was a cat here who named himself after that record. Drummer Man.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Mel Nils knows about him. It's a tricky cat. But look, one thing you don't have to worry about.
But
now,
you know, I have
Brother Matt's going to bring the spin cycle, and there's going to be no George Benson.
No
break
George
it, Brother
Benson.
Matt.
Well, you know.
baby, with the snakes and the bugs in my door.
What does that mean?
What you browsed, can you tell us why?
Our guest.
Okay. Hockey boat. You inspired Brother Matt to bring forth his spin cycle.
Yeah.
Thank you much.
Tom Waits got some totally distinctive sound, okay. And Mark got some of the most awesome guitar work on that stuff.
Yeah.
He's bitching, so thanks for that.
Well, we asked him about it. Well, you don't remember. You don't remember
so much
that?
Cool stuff. It's hard to separate all the
Mark,
cool
do you
stuff.
Remember those sessions?
I don't remember. It was a long time ago. No, I do remember. Actually, that tune I do remember because I think that one was recorded in a repurposed chicken farm, and you can still kind of smell the chickens.
And odor
bit.
To it.
Or
Tom do a
yeah,
lot of
not
that
exactly
stuff.
Exactly the chickens.
Get
themselves.
That proper sound.
No, but doesn't he live up in Petaluma or something?
I think so.
Because Petaluma is the chicken capital of California.
Near wow. up in Sonoma. Yeah, that's exactly it. It was, you know, one of the famous Petaluma chicken farms or something.
Okay, yeah.
But it was then a recording studio.
Well, there's another music thing about Petaluma. It's the home of Mesa Boogie.
Oh,
Carlos Santana.
Oh,
huh. You know that Carlos Santana sound?
Mesa Boogie amps?
Yeah.
I have to say, I never really got along with those. They always seemed like big, heavy fuzz boxes to me. I
understand what you mean. So you know what? That might have been a chicken ranch.
Yeah, cool.
Or farm. Look, we're at the end of the second hour. What was that, Mark?
The chickens on the record, though.
Okay.
But they had a big influence.
Big influence. Well, I know about the shit they used to clean chicken shit off. The methamphetamine cooks would use the ephedrine.
Oh, yeah, right.
That was their connect. Yeah. Always chicken farmers.
Ephedrine.
Okay.
I'm learning a lot from this interview.
What's that?
I'm learning a lot of really useful.
Yeah, there was
I'm
also
learning a lot of really useful.
Here's one more Petaluma thing. A guy's with a lot of money, his boy got killed on a Vinson Silver Shadow, you know, really fast bikes. Mm-hmm. They got one at Century, I think. Mm-hmm. So he tried to buy them all up, bury the motherfuckers.
Wow.
No one would ever ride them again.
Wow.
You believe that shit? We're at the end of the second hour. Wow. Mark B-Day, December 20, 2018. Special guest Mark Rabeau. Hold tight for hour three. December 20, 2018. It's the third hour. The Watt from Pedro Show.
I've oft been told where the body lies when the heart grows cold, but grand, oh grand. This wish to me, and bury me not on the lone prairie. I've always wished when I die to be buried there on the green hillside by my father's grave. There let mine be, and bury me not on the lone prairie. Took no heed of his dying prayer. In a narrow grave, barely 6x3, buried him there.
it anyway. Do it anyway. Do it anyway. I'm
Chimo! Guitar!
Watt for Pedro show okay. Started off the third hour with "Bury Me Not on the Lone Prairie" by the majestic Silver Strings. What's going on there?
Oh well, the band Majestic Silver Strings is a project put together by Buddy Miller, guitarist and band leader extraordinaire.
Yeah,
he's kind of like the king of Nashville, an unbelievably great guitarist. You know.
By the way. You know, we just lost a great bass man, Joe Osborne.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that.
He played with a pick. Hey, do you have a problem with bass players playing with a pick? I mean, I don't use them, but I think it's okay.
You know, it depends. You know, it's an effect that I like it when a bass player knows how to do that. And, some people can do it, the whole thing. Some people can use it as a good effect.
Yeah.
You know, I mean... Most bass players that I work with play with their fingers, but sometimes it works, you know? So oh, yeah. It depends on the tune.
Yeah, yeah. Some dudes use their nail like a pick, like Chuck Rainey. Chuck Rainey uses the back of his fingernail, and sometimes I do that because you can lose picks. It's hard to lose fingers. Anyway, so Bobby Miller put this together, Majestic Silver Strings.
Yeah, and the tune, that's right, but Buddy Miller put it together, you know, we recorded it down in his house in Nashville, and, you know, it was me, Frizzell, and Greg Leeson. Anyways, it was, you know, Jay Bellarose, and I guess it was about 6 years ago, maybe 7 years ago, I don't know. I lost track, but really cool record. We never toured on it, because it was so hard to put all those different people together and, you know, at the same time, but really, really cool record. Another cool tune on there is, my friend, Mark Anthony Thompson sang the tune Dang Me.
Roger Miller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Roger Miller too, but our version was a little different.
Marcus. 2 weeks of pushing broom.
Yeah, but the song Dang Me, Dang Me, like.
Radio, silent movies.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Well, yeah, I can't read minds. You got to use words, Mark. What about it?
Oh, words. Oh, so you want me to describe it? Do you want me to talk about which
just some kind of insight?
Breaking up.
Just some kind of insight.
Intro to silent movies. Yeah. Oh, okay. Silent movies. It was just I wanted to do a solo record, and people think that it was like a score to a silent movie or something, but really was the opposite. How silent movies are film visual images that gives you ideas for sound. I wanted to do sound that gave you ideas for visual.
That's great.
Music. I really should have called it Blind Songs, but that didn't seem right either.
Blind Songs. That's great. Then we had Sad in the Sun, Live by Mind, Revolutionary, Hell Yeah. Dietrich and Barnes, that's John Dietrich from Deerhoof, Jeremy Barnes, Special Questions. And finally, Do It Any Way You Want It by the Young Philadelphians. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, that's I've been jamming with Jamaluddin Takuma and Calvin Weston, who were the rhythm section on Ornette Coleman's original Prime Time Band, which is like, you know, those... Early primetime records of Human Feelings and all that were just some of my favorite ever.
I saw Calvin with James Blood Ulmer and Amin.
Exactly, yeah.
Amin on the bass, yeah. Rashid Ali's, no. Amin Ali's. And he quit bass, right?
Right.
Calvin's son got killed.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah. Incredible cat. That's right.
Okay, Calvin Weston lives in Philadelphia, and that's where Jamaluddin. I saw Jamaluddin. This was the prime time with two bass, two drum, two guitar. He broke a string on the first song and never changed. Did the whole set with three strings, bitching. What about the spiritual unity?
Jamal, yeah.
Okay. I want to play the spiritual unity.
Well, that was a band, Henry Grimes from, who had played on some of my favorite Albert Eiler tracks. He was missing for a long time.
Nels Klein helped bring him back.
Well, I didn't realize that Nels was involved. Yeah. Yep. But that makes sense because Nels was in L.A. Anyways, no one knew he was out there in L.A., but he just wasn't playing music. He was living in an SRO and, you know, barely surviving. And a number of people, I know, you know, Margaret, well, who later married him, became, helped and, anyways, I'm glad to hear Nels was involved. People rediscovered him, and as soon as I heard he was back, I you know, got in touch and I said, I'd like to do a, you know, a project. And so I figured starting on some Albert Eiler tunes would be a good place to start, but the band quickly grew from there and, you know, it was me, him, and Chad Taylor and the late Roy Campbell Jr. on trumpet. And that's, you know, yeah, that's how that record came about.
Well, let's listen.
Thank you. away from me with your... Throw away your books, throw away your images, keep away from me. Throw away your books, throw away your image, keep away from me with your metaphor.
It's not the world, it's a beast. Different between, it wasn't and it won't. It isn't, yes it can, when it is, then it don't. Our minds whisper screams, let the skipper to some dream. Our brain says your mind's done it all. We only exist when we're fed up. We are not alone. Are you with me? Lack of searching, coming for some substantial situations. Waiting through the ignorant and the falling explanations. And life is reaching blindly for some subtractive divisions and dictators when the conditions are right. All opposites, up here backwards, just forgetting, and once more new. Solutions I know we know, cruising round this mystic hole. Solutions I know we know, cruising round this mystic hole. Solutions I know we know, cruising round this mystic hole. We only exist when we're thought of. We are not alone. Are you with me? It's not the world, it's a beast. Don't be clean, it wasn't and it won't. It isn't, and yes it can. When it does, then it don't. Our minds whisper scream, let us skip into some dream. My brain says your mind's done it all for me.
Bye.
For Pedro Show, yeah, Spiritual Unity project Mark was just telling us about. Aaliyah, Heaven 11 out of Japan, and then Yo, I Killed Your God, Requiem for what's his name? What's that, Proj?
wait, hold on a second. Yo, I Killed You. Oh, yeah, that's right. That was the name of the record. Requiem for what's his name. That was a long time ago, too. But yeah, that was like Yo, I Killed Your God. Well, okay, the origin of the tune, I mean, that was, I think that was, what were we calling it? Still calling it Ruthless Cosmopolitans? I think we'd switched to the band name Shrek. I went through band names so fast, I can't even remember which one we were using on a particular CD. But, yeah, that tune was part of my, brief radical new Jewish music phase, and you know, like I just remember I was arguing with this relative of mine who had become a fundamentalist Christian and is always trying to bring me to
that's the greatest experience in the world.
which I don't mind whatever anybody believes, you know, it's cool, but like he was being very persistent about trying to convince me to go where I just constitutionally was unable to go. And so eventually I thought of this tune as a kind of response of why, explaining why.
Well, I want to thank him for inspiring you on that. Then we had Tholem with Just Forgetting It and What's New. And finally, Mark Ribot's Ceramic Dog with Lies My Body Told Me. Mark, You got to play with Bob Quine. Can you tell me about him? He had such an influence on D. Boone.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's like, I mean, I was a huge fan before I met Quine. Like, I was a big fan of the Voidoids, you know, and Richard Hell. And I loved his work with that band. And then I met him through Zorn. We played on some session together. Zorn had two guitars, and it was for some kind of Japanese cartoon. We were doing the score for a Japanese cartoon. And I remember, like, Zorn went to Quine and said, you know, there was some scene that was like a crazy, chaotic thing, and it was like 7 seconds, and told Quine, I want you to sum up your whole, all your playing in just 7 seconds. And then Quine said, yeah, okay, I'll just lay out. And
John Cage.
And Quine, yeah, he was like, you know, he was a cool guy, and he hit me a little to a lot of music. He was an amazing record collector, the kind that would go, you know, and, you know, go through, in the mid 60s, you know, go to black neighborhoods in the Midwest and ask if he could buy people's records, you know. So he had an amazing record collection. I remember, and he would make me cassettes. He made me a cassette of, what was it? He made me a bunch. He hit me to Henry Grimes, first of all.
What do you think you learned most on guitar from him?
Well, I learned, first of all, his sound was always amazing. He worked a lot on his sound, and always had a great, completely rock sound. And what I learned was, you know, he was a pure rock guitarist. In the sense, not that he was playing any kind of rock cliches, but in the sense that his sense of time and his sense of kind of terror while he was playing was, it was like almost a philosophical position.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
I mean, I noticed this in my own playing too, but like, you know, everybody is, when you're trying to, like, when you listen to a jazz soloist, even if they're playing a short solo, it sounds like, it sounds like they have all the time in the world to get to the end, you know?
Yeah.
But if you listen to somebody who has a rock musician's sense of time, it sounds like, even if they have 20 minutes, it sounds like they're in a rush to get to the end because they're afraid they might die.
Yeah.
And, like,
emotional.
That's like just, yeah. Well, it's, and I don't mean necessarily you have to play a lot of notes. It's just a different way of experiencing time.
Yeah, and I think I know what you mean.
It's almost like a philosophical position.
Yeah, they're not so comfortable with the time.
Exactly, not so comfortable with, it's not only a question of, I mean, okay, if you want to rock, you got to have good time, you have to be able to make people dance and, you know, all that stuff. But there's something about Quine's time. I don't mean time in sense of just the eighth note, but I mean in sense of time on this planet.
Sure.
You could feel it in his solos from Waves of Fear on, you know. There was an urgency about existence is all I can say. So he had this thing. I mean, he's really, I would say, one of the inventors of punk rock as a guitar solo style. You know, the ability to actually do a guitar solo.
That's exactly what D. Boone said.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the Ramones weren't about solos, you know.
No, but D. Boone was coming from John Fogerty, Buck Dharma, and Pete Townsend. So when he heard Bob Quine coming from this movement, it was just a mind blow for him.
Yeah, exactly. It was recognizably different. It was like it was a different language. And it's interesting to me that Quine's language was new, but it was completely informed by like the whole history of rock.
Yeah, right, right. He did his homework.
He sent me a tape of, yeah, and I mean, he did it like crazy. He sent me a tape once, a cassette tape, which was he edited out the words, and he just Ike Turner guitar solos. And there was one solo from outtakes that he did, reissue of like Ike Turner outtakes on the song Matchbox.
Yeah.
And he put this one there three times, the same solo, just in case he didn't want me to miss how amazing it was. So Quine knew his shit.
Yeah,
you know.
Did. He really
influenced him, no matter how out he went. It was rooted in that.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate to get to do that one recording with you. That was a great thing. Mark, what you got planned now?
Well, right now, nothing. I'm kind of not doing much until I just got home from a bunch of touring.
Yeah.
Touring with Ceramic Dog, and then coming in towards the end of January, I have some more touring with Ceramic Dog and some of the Songs of Resistance Project stuff to do.
Okay.
And between then, I'm going to meditate.
That's good. And people can find you on the internet at markrebeau.com?
All one word, markrebeau.com.
Okay, people, that's markrebeau.com. Check it out, because he's got beautiful shit there. Spelled it right, didn't I?
You did. Thank you.
You know, it's been beautiful having you aboard. You've been a hero of mine a long time. I love the way you work your guitar, the way you do music, the whole fucking shlebang. Now I got to learn about your journey through music.
Man,
it was
an inspiration to us all.
You're most kind. But what a way to celebrate turning 61. Thank you, Mark, so much. And Brother Matt, always your essential aid.
Happy birthday, brother. Happy birthday.
Only 61 more. It's been the 2018 edition of Wapapito Show. People, keep your powder dry. Yeah.